I'm Joy Manning, a freelance writer focused on food and health.
And I'm Marisa McClellan, creator of Food in Jars.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week, we're talking about crispy tofu, broccoli and garlic sauce, and I've got a cholesterol update for all of you. But first, let's talk about something I read this week. And now I'm sure you've read it too, Marisa. Did you see the link I dropped in there?
I did.
So this is an article from the website The Counter. And the headline is, less than half of Americans know that alcohol is a carcinogen. Big Booze wants to keep it that way. I mean, naturally, that caught my eye.
Of course.
I thought it was interesting that this was... The Counter does mostly food, food stuff. And I think this does sort of qualify as a food policy issue, because specifically what they're looking at is warning labels.
Yeah.
The story starts with the tale of some Canadian researchers who had government funding to study what a cancer warning label would look like on alcohol sold at just one store, similar to what you see on cigarette packages. The scientific community has been totally clear that alcohol causes cancer since at least 1988, when it was declared a carcinogen by the World Health Organization. But, you know, it's far from common knowledge. According to this article, 50% of people didn't know about it. And I don't think I knew it before I stopped drinking, to be honest.
Really?
Yes. I don't think I fully grasped that it was a carcinogen on par with cigarettes. I don't think I got that. So I'm not totally surprised to see so many people don't understand it either. But anyway, this whole thing, the study was shut down in only 1 month because of how powerful the alcohol industry is. Even in that 1 month's time, they found that the sales were down by 6%. So it did have some effect. So I don't know. It's not shocking to me. This article wasn't shocking to me because I've read a lot of this stuff before, but I'm sure it's surprising to some people. And it is just like a bummer that, you know, the industry has the financial clout to be able to purposely confuse a public health issue.
Definitely. I mean, but it is certainly the story of capitalism, you know?
Yeah, I know. So I guess, like, for me, a lot of times when I think about this stuff and talk about this stuff with other people, they assume that I think that alcohol should be somehow like banned or illegal or whatever. And that's not really my take on it, but I do believe in the idea of like informed consent with the public. Like, if people are going to choose to drink alcohol, they should understand better what they're doing.
Definitely. Absolutely. I think that most people think alcohol is bad from a like, oh, you know, you have to deal with a hangover, or, you know, you can overindulge, but it really really does harm. And it's important to know.
Well, some cancers are more sensitive to alcohol than other. I mean, breast cancer, even, you know, just very light drinking can increase your breast cancer risk. So there was that great article in Mother Jones a few years ago that was very eye-opening to me. I'll share this in the comments or in the show notes section. I hope you'll all give it a read. I know the pandemic has really caused an increase in drinking, especially among women, especially among moms. And it's not as harmless as the industry tries to make it out to be. Perhaps a little bit of a bummer to think about around the holidays, but important nonetheless. And as always, you know, I'm a fan of The Counter. I think everything they do is very well done. And this article is no exception, really well researched and reported. So I hope you all give it a read. So what's for dinner at your house this week, Marisa?
So I am on a real crispy tofu kick right now. And it's crispy oven baked tofu. Like, there is nothing about frying that is fun for me. Like, I don't like the smell. I don't want to have to deal with a lot of oil. I don't want to have to clean it up. Like, so I'm never going to be a tofu deep fryer kind of person. But I do love a little cube of oven-baked crispy tofu. And I have made it like 3 times in the last 2 weeks, in part because I had a backlog of tofu from my Philly Food Works. I get an order every other week. And in that order, I get 2 blocks of tofu. And with Thanksgiving, I sort of backed up on tofu. I had a little backlog. And so I've been making it a lot. But I also really enjoy it. Do you make – I mean, I know you make a crispy tofu.
I do. And lately I've been making it in the air fryer.
I did a sponsored Instagram post for Ninja, and they sent me their like foodie air oven, and I have used it for baking. I haven't used it for air frying yet, but I need to because I think it's probably going to be life changing.
It's really, I mean, for me, it's because I do eat a fair amount of tofu. It's kind of worth it just for the tofu alone, because you get like really restaurant style fried tofu with just the barest film of oil on the tofu in the air fryer, which I love.
Yeah.
I have tried it. Coat it with potato starch or cornstarch or whatever, and it doesn't really add anything, so I've just been leaving it plain lately.
Mm. See, I really enjoy it. So the one I've been making is just one block of tofu, sort of. I cut it into three slabs, and I put it on towels and sort of just press some of the liquid out of it. I don't, you know, I do it in like 2 minutes. You can let it dry for like half an hour, and I'm sure that would give you a crisper tofu cube, but I never think that far ahead. So I just kind of press it dry real quickly and cut it into cubes, and then toss it with a tablespoon of cornstarch, a tablespoon of soy sauce, and a scant tablespoon of neutral oil. And so I toss that all together. I put it in a baking pan and make sure everything is spread out so that that there's maximum crisping opportunity. And then I just bake it for like 25 to 30 minutes at 400 degrees. And one trick that I do employ is I keep a baking steel in my oven all the time. And so I put it on the hot baking steel so that the bottom crisps up as well as the top. And really, it's been great. I mean, I should try it in the air fryer. But even in the oven, just kind of throwing it into my 55-year-old oven, it's been really good and satisfying. And Scott really likes it. We've given little bits of it to the boys and they enjoy it. So it's just a nice little easy family friendly meal.
Do you turn it while it's in there or just leave it on the one side?
Just leave it on the one side. I cannot
be bothered.
I cannot be bothered. God, I sound really lazy, but
no, and I know the feeling.
And then what I've been doing too is that I throw a second sheet pan in the oven with like cut up broccoli or Brussels sprouts or cauliflower, you know, whatever hearty slabs of cabbage, kind of whatever hearty roasting friendly vegetable I have around, and then make some rice, and that's dinner. And it's, everyone likes it. The babies are really into rice right now. They really like it. And so I've been doing like little batches of egg fried rice for them with the leftover rice. It's like, it's a meal that is, kind of puzzle piecing into my life in a way that is really very satisfying and smooth, which right now I need.
Yeah, I like that. I haven't done tofu in the oven in a while. I love the addition of soy sauce. Soy sauce and tofu are good friends, obviously. Yeah. And then putting everything on sheet pans in the oven, it obviously gives you some hands-off time to, like, I don't know, raise two children and keep your household in order.
Oh, you know.
So that's handy.
Yeah.
And then no sauce or anything?
Just another little dash of soy sauce to serve. I mean, I know that there are a million ways you could make this even better. You could spice it up. You could, you know, make a really good dipping sauce. But in terms of like speed and ease, like, you know, a little pile of rice in the bottom of a flat bowl with a healthy scoop of this tofu and then the roasted veg and then just a dash of soy sauce on top is really very good.
There's a lot to be said for keeping it simple, too.
Yeah.
I've been eating a lot of just like food out of bowls lately as well. When I first transitioned to a plant-based diet, I was like, I'm not going to become one of those bowls vegans. You know what I mean? Like the Buddha bowl vegan.
Yes.
And I'm not, but I do appreciate a bowl dinner. Well, that sounds quite tasty.
It's really very good. I love it.
I do encourage you to try the air fryer because you can get crispy tofu in just 10 minutes.
I will definitely try it.
Not that that's a giant time savings, but, and you are cooking now for four. You know, I have said to Dan, I love using the air fryer, but if I were feeding four people, it would probably be less convenient because it doesn't hold a lot.
Yeah.
Typically only doing half a block of tofu in there.
That is one nice thing about this, this Ninja foodie oven thing is that it's massive, which is a plus and a minus. Like it's living
depending on your space.
Yeah. It's living in the second kitchen. So it's not as convenient to use, but it's there when I need it, and it's very speedy. It's a convection style sort of toaster oven, air fryer, you know.
Yeah.
and it's nice.
Well, you'll have to give it a try and tell me what you think.
I will.
So stop me if I told you this story before. But on the day, you know, my dad is in a nursing home and like, I wanted my dad to be able to vote. And so I ended up needing to wait in line for 3 hours at the tail end of the period to apply for your mail-in ballot. And so like, anyway, so while I was standing around in the cold that day and I started to think about Chinese food and Chinese takeout specifically. And when I was a young person in college in New York City, and these were kind of my first experiences of takeout Chinese food. I never had it as a kid.
Yes. Really?
And the dish that I loved most was broccoli and garlic sauce from takeout places. Are you familiar with this dish?
Oh, yeah. This is a classic of the Americanized Chinese food canon, and I feel like is one that I have spent most of my life
eating.
I just
love it. It's salty and sweet. If you're lucky, the broccoli is crisp tender. The perfect sauce is sweet but not too sweet. It is thick enough to cling to your vegetables but not gloppy. And so I started to think about this while I was waiting in line, and it became like a complete obsession. And so when I got home, I was like, I have to find some kind of like Americanized Chinese takeout place where I can order this from now, even though I've never ordered Chinese food really to like in my South Philadelphia life. Either I'm going to Chinatown to eat some kind of like Sichuan food or something, or I'm getting like trendy upscale Asian inspired food, like such as at Bing Bing Dim Sum, for example. So there's a giant hole in the options, as far as I'm concerned, for like good Americanized Chinese takeout, which I think exists, you know? Okay, so we ordered from a very random place, like in my neighborhood, and it was fine. It scratched my itch for this broccoli and garlic sauce, but the sauce was both too sweet and too thick, and the broccoli was overcooked. So I wanted to do better, basically. And I don't know how I found this website, Walks of Life. Do you know the Walks of Life website?
Only because you've mentioned it.
Walks of Life has, it's a family. The dad used to cook at Chinese takeout restaurants. And so, you know, they have some cred in that department. And I found their recipe for takeout style broccoli and garlic sauce. And I was excited to make it, but I didn't have all the ingredients I needed, right? So it called for dark soy sauce and Shaoxing wine. I'm sorry if I'm saying that wrong. So I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. I have to get these things. And I did. I got the dark soy sauce at the big Asian grocery store on 11th and Washington, and I ordered the Shaoxing wine on the internet. And for those of you who are wondering how I square using this wine in my cooking with not consuming alcohol, it's only a tablespoon, and I think the alcohol burns off as you stir fry. So I made it, and it was incredible. It made me so happy.
Oh, good.
Basically, you just chop up 4 cloves of garlic, which is quite a bit of garlic. The sauce has those two ingredients, plus regular soy sauce, plus sugar, toasted sesame oil, a cornstarch slurry, the things that you would expect. I'm going to link to this recipe. I don't have a wok, so I did it in a hot cast iron skillet. And first I put the broccoli in to get like a little char on the broccoli, you know, and then I added the garlic and the liquids and stuff. And because broccoli and garlic sauce is not really dinner, you know, without any kind of protein in it, I added soy curls.
Okay.
But you know what else would be good? Crispy tofu.
It totally would.
And then I served it over rice, and it is like making me so happy lately. I've made it like 5 times in the last 3 weeks or a month, and it's really just incredibly wonderful. And I encourage everybody who is missing like Chinese takeout or, you know, a simpler time of – that's not the right way to – I love all the options that we have in Asian food. I love regional Chinese food, but there is something nostalgic to me about those dishes. What's your favorite?
I love that exact. I mean, I love a broccoli and garlic sauce situation. I also love like a blistered string bean in that same kind of sauce. Like that is one of my very favorite things. Or like a Chinese broccoli.
Oh, with no sauce.
Yeah, no sauce other than like a little bit of soy sauce, sesame oil, and blistered bits of garlic.
Something in my memory is saying you have a place. Is it Circle on Square or something?
Well, I mean, there are several Chinese restaurants right in my neighborhood that we order from. There's Mandarin Palace, which is right down the street, which is actually the Chinese restaurant that my grandparents used to go to. So my family has – I've literally been eating there my whole life. And it's good. It's not great, but it's good. Then there's Square on Square, which used to be on my block, but is now like four blocks away. They moved to a cheaper location. And I love them because they use really high quality chicken. And so if you're eating, if you're still eating meat, their chicken is like very, it's not gristly. It's like they only use white meat. It's very, or like in like a broccoli stir fry situation. And so it's just very high quality, because that's one issue with Chinese food is often that the meat is sort of subpar, especially if it's really inexpensive. And so Square on Square is a little bit more pricey. My very favorite Chinese restaurant in the whole city closed in the pandemic,
oh,
which
no.
I'm really sad about.
What is it?
Which is – it was Beijing. It was on Penn's campus across – it was across the street from Scott's office. And so for years, I would like meet him after work and we'd go get dinner. This is obviously before the kids were born. Or he'd bring home takeout. And with the campus closed, they'd been there for like 30 years, it shut down. And then I also love, oh God, is it in Chinatown, Li Hao Fook?
Oh, right.
Which is my favorite Chinatown Chinese food restaurant. And they deliver on like DoorDash or one of those. So we've definitely gotten takeout from them, during the pandemic. But there is something to be said for making it yourself. A couple of years ago, I got very into making my own Chinese food. There's a book, Chinese Soul Food, by, I'm not going to say her name right, because I'm bad at pronunciation. I think it's Hiao Ching Chao. And it's a really great book. She's someone who grew up in a family that had a Chinese restaurant, like an Americanized Chinese restaurant. And then she has a new one coming out in January that I'm excited for, because it's vegetarian Chinese soul food. So I have a feeling
you'll
really
like
that
book,
Joy. Yeah, it's called Vegetarian Chinese Soul Food.
Maybe we can request review copies.
I know, because I really want to cook from it. But yeah, Chinese food is definitely – like takeout Chinese food is part of my life. Like there's never been a time – although growing up, my little immediate family of my parents and my sister and I, we – living on the West Coast, there's not as much Chinese takeout. There's more Vietnamese and Thai. So we got a lot more Vietnamese and Thai food when I was growing up. But coming to Philadelphia, we always got – Chinese food from Mandarin Palace down the street. They used to have this big plaque on the wall of galloping horses, and it was like a 3D relief situation, so it looked like the horses were leaping out at you. And they remodeled like 10 years ago and got rid of it, and I was so sad because we always used to
Bummer.
Sit under it, and it made me think of my grandparents. But anyway, this is off topic.
Yeah, especially with so many fewer restaurant meals in my life, it's fun to be able to make something that feels like, I don't know, restaurant-y at home.
Definitely. And, you know, the nice thing about doing it yourself, too, is that the one drawback to getting takeout Chinese food is that it's often very high in oil and can leave you feeling a little bit gross. I don't mean to cast aspersions on Chinese food, just that takeout Chinese food can be a little bit oily. And my body doesn't handle, like, cups and cups of oil very well. And so making it yourself, you can control that.
I use maybe 2 tablespoons in the whole recipe. But I will share it and encourage you to make it if you, like, Maurice and I love broccoli with garlic sauce. So I have an update for you and for everyone. You've all
I'm
been
excited.
With me on my cholesterol control journey here. And I recently switched doctors to a practice that specializes in heart disease prevention. So, yeah.
Oh, wow.
When you get your physical, you get not just the standard blood work, but a very detailed blood work that shows you markers of inflammation, the type of particles your cholesterol is, and like a boatload of other stuff. And I just went through the whole thing. So I'm really proud and excited to tell you my cholesterol is down to 178, which is well within the normal range.
That is amazing. Congratulations, Joy.
Thank you. I have dropped it 85 points from its high of 263 in 2017.
Wow.
My doctor said she has rarely, if ever, seen anybody drop their cholesterol so much with a lifestyle alone.
You were totally dedicated to this.
But to get into some of the finer points, my LDL is still slightly high. That's the bad cholesterol. It's still 9 points out of range, which is categorized as near ideal. But when heart disease is concerned, obviously you want to get it into the ideal range. I was relieved to find out that the LDL particles that I have are the big particles and not the small ones. The small ones are more associated with heart attacks and strokes. However, I still want to get it down, and I have to like really target the remaining saturated fat in my world, which mostly comes from coconut, vegan baked goods that I buy from bakeries, Ben and Jerry's vegan ice cream, or you know, most commercial vegan ice creams. But I think I can do it. I'm going to get it tested again in 4 months. So, the other thing I learned is they do this big body composition analysis, right? And so I'm not overweight, but I am over fat. And they analyze all the quadrants of your body. So my arms and legs are okay. It is my middle that is over fat. And the doctor told me to switch to HIIT workouts, high intensity interval training workouts, which help burn fat, and to try to eat fewer carbs, which is so hard for me because I just love carbs. The goal here, and to do strength training, obviously, which I have a really hard time sticking to, with the goal not of losing weight, but like of shifting my body composition. That was slightly a bummer to see that chart. But, you know.
Joy, the fact that you have done this in the middle of a global pandemic is really very impressive.
Oh, well, thank you. And I am really, the reason I like to share it with people is I want people to feel empowered around their health. You know, I think a lot of us have like a learned helplessness, and we think, people say all the time, oh, my cholesterol is hereditary, genetic, so there's nothing I can do. Well, you know, mine is genetic. Like, I had a pretty healthy diet before. A lot of people who were eating the way that I was eating have no problems, including my husband.
Yeah.
So it's a choice. You know, you can be aggressive and manage it with lifestyle, or at least try to, or, you know, it's also a perfectly valid choice to want to use medication. But you do have that choice. And I think that's a thing that people fail to understand. To that end, I have signed up to do the online cooking school for plant-based, to become a certified plant-based chef via Ruby.
And oh, wow. I started that's last exciting. Week. How
it's
is
cool.
It?
So, yeah, I'm going to learn how to, it'll be interesting to see what I learn. I feel like I already know a lot, but I have no formal training. And this is specifically for plant-based, all things plant-based. And the reason I want to do it is I really want to share this message more with other people. I don't know what that looks like in the future, whether I'm coaching people in their own kitchens, or whether I'm doing like online group coaching around cooking amazing plant-based meals for heart health or what have you. But it seemed like an if not now, when thing, because, you know, I am kind of busy with work, but I still have weekends to fill and nights and stuff. So, like, I don't know. It just seemed like a good time to pursue that.
That's fantastic.
Because if I can do it, other people can do it. I guess that's the thing. That's always, other people have always inspired me to do things, and I want to help inspire other people, I guess.
Yeah.
Your heart health is pretty, you know, pretty important. I also got an EKG. It was bananas.
Wow.
I got screenings that like assessed my blood clotting risk and my artery health. There were so many tests, Marisa. They screened my eyes and my ears, my hearing. I was there for like 2 hours.
Oh my gosh. Anyway,
so that's the update.
Well, that's very cool. Good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
you're welcome. Oh, I also wanted to tell you about my nutrition. They evaluated all of my vitamins and everything. And having been on this plant-based diet, my vitamin D is good. My iron is good. My calcium is good. You know what is not good? B12. I'm B12 deficient.
Well, that's easy enough to fix with a supplement, though.
Yes, I have a supplement that I ordered, and the thing is, I was confused about my nutritional yeast. Like, I was using the one brand of nutritional yeast that does not have B12 added to it. So if you want to get B12 with your nutritional yeast, you want to buy Bragg's or Bob's Red Mill. Anyway.
Good to know.
So in a nutshell, that's that. Thank you all for coming with me on this fun adventure. So, Marisa, tell me what you're loving.
So I have really been loving the Cookish cookbook from Milk Street. Now, we all know I love cookbooks, but I don't actually typically do a lot of cooking from them. But what I love about this is that it is a cookbook that's kind of written in the style in which I cook. Like, there's certainly specific recipes, but then there are lots of things where it's like in the vegetable section, all of these little, like, just kind of throw it together ingredients or instructions. And it is a lot of very simple things, highly spiced. Yeah, it's just a cookbook that I've really been enjoying and that I've actually been, you know, cooking from, or at the very least deriving a lot of inspiration from. I'm trying to look for some things that have really caught my eye. The vegetable section. Oh, here's one that I just flipped through. Garlic noodles with shiitake mushrooms. This is one that I've made for myself when Scott is playing D&D on Friday nights. It's just been really a really fun book to explore. It's packed with food. I've just been really enjoying it. There's another recipe I just came across, soupy rice with mushrooms and greens. And it's been a long time that I have found a book that has so much that feels like how I cook and how I want to cook. There's a whole bean section where it is canned beans. And, you know, it's like, I love to cook beans from scratch, but sometimes I like to rely on a can of beans. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And they have all these just kind of quick little recipes for canned beans with just a few ingredients. And I've made several of them. Like, there's a white bean and avocado salad with lemon and herbs. And I didn't have everything. I didn't have a shallot. I used some onion, but it's just quick and easy and really speaks to me.
I love Milk Street. I think they do a good job.
Yeah, they really, really do. And I've enjoyed all of their previous books, but there's something about this one that just kind of says that when I open it, I'm like, oh yeah, there's going to be a lot in here that speaks to me that I can adapt or use. There are going to be ideas I can take. They have that, you know, ages ago, we talked about that little technique that you use to do vegetables where you it's like the steam and then kind of glaze. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. right? They have like six variations on that are just fast and easy with interesting little like spices or like ginger or something like that to keep it interesting.
The combo and, saute steam.
Yes, there we go. And again, it's just – it feels like a very accessible book. And so I just wanted to recommend it. I am really loving it.
Is it a new book or has it been out a little while?
It's new. It came out this fall. So it's definitely a new one. And I wish that we need to do someday just like a cookbook episode, because there are a lot of books out there that I'm really enjoying right now. But another one that I just want to give like a honorary mention, second mention to right now is Sheet Pan Chicken by Kathy Irway, who is someone I've known through the food writing world for years and years and years. And it's just a great little sheet pan chicken book.
Cool.
So if that's your, you know, sheet pan chicken is definitely one of my go-to kind of categories of cooking and food.
I find it incredible that there's a whole cookbook worth of recipes for sheet pan chicken. But
well, and she's, she wrote a Taiwanese cookbook, and that's one of her, you know, that's where some of her family of origin come from. And so it has a really nice flavorful flair. I feel like a lot of sheet pan books are sometimes, you know, a little too kind of dumbed down or American in terms of flavor. Mm-hmm. And hers is very interesting and bright and flavorful.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Let's do a book episode sometime.
Maybe in January when we're all trying to get back to cooking healthfully. Although you never stop, Joy, I know. but we're trying to get back on the sort of regular weeknight cooking wagon.
Sounds like a plan.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think that's about it for this episode of Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.